Hello, this is Paramjeet Singh from paramjeetsingh.com.
So we are going to talk about fear and stress, especially what it does to our biology and what it does to our decision making, and how it can be very important, especially in a moment of emergency and crisis. I would invite you to consider this whole thing I'm going to speak to you in the context or in the context of skeptical empirical approach, which means that you do not have to believe a word I say here. But I invite you to be an empiricist, which means that do it yourself and see where it leads you, especially the practical part of it. That's the best way to do things because it allows us to experiment, be curious, and work with the skills at a more practical level. We all know certain things at intellectual level, yet at the same time, when the rubber hits the road, like the crisis we just suddenly found ourselves in, our intellectual understanding usually takes a burner and does not come handy because our automatic part of the brain takes over. The reactionary, automatic, autonomic systems actually take over. So this is where the practical aspect of this whole thing I'm going to talk to you is going to be very relevant and very important. So we all know, you guys are part of the science program. We all know what fear and stress do to our brain. It hijacks and literally offlines the most important part of the brain, which allows us to make decisions. Because when we are stressed out, the part of the limbic system is active, which, because it's very excitable, it hijacks the cortical system, which is the most important thing for us to take a pause and make a decision which will be safe and will reduce the harm to others during, especially in the moments of crisis like we find in. And same happens with the fear, because fear, stress, anxiety, aggression, all these strong emotions do work through the same systems. They're often more excitable systems, and then they start to hijack the frontal cortex, which is the what we call the decision maker in our brain, especially the systems related to the dorsolateral frontal cortex. So what I'm going to speak to you, that there's a way for us to work on the way brain functions, especially under crisis, and that's where we need to require some little bit of practical training. And one of the technique, and please remember, this is one of the technique. There's many other things which would work, but the technique I'm familiar with it, and the technique or the base technique I practice, this is what I'm going to share with you. So please keep in mind, this is one of many things that would be very useful under crisis. But this is one thing I use. This is one thing I've trained in. And this is one thing I use, practice every day. So this is what I'm going to actually share with you. That how this very simple technique can be very useful way to just calm down, to just take a moment of pause and reflection and not react to things almost automatically. And even if we have to react to things automatically, then automatic reactions done after a pause would have a very different quality than if it is done just on the spur of moment. And the reactions that's coming out of a slate of clarity have a different quality and outcomes and consequences than just a kind of a knee-jerk reactions. So the technique I'm going to share with you, and then I'm going to actually get into the practical part. That's why I said that I'm going to keep the first part very simple, because this part is important, but not the most important thing. For example, if you know the technique and you don't know all this, whole limbic system and the frontal cortical system are a bidirectional communication, that is not going to make much difference. That's intellectual knowledge, useful in some context, but especially when you're making a decision or you're under a crisis, that knowledge is usually not very useful, because unless we have trained our brain to be or work in a different way, it defaults to its automatic way. So intellectual knowledge finds its limitation during those processes, and that's where we have to train ourselves to change the default of the brain to function slightly differently. The technique I'm going to share with you, you might have heard this is a quite common technique these days, one of the many common techniques, and that's what mindfulness is. And again, I will say that this is not the only thing that works, but this is the thing I'm very familiar with it. And this is where I have trained and I practice every day. So I'm going to share it with you from the standpoint of as a practitioner. Rest, everything is up for you to experiment with it. I would invite you to bring curiosity and experimentation or experimental spirit to this process, because that's what a real scientist does. The thing I'm going to really talk about is the central part of it, the training of the mind within that context. And usually the way we train our mind to be more present, purposeful, deliberative, intentional is following three steps, which some of those steps we are very familiar with, and some of you may not be familiar, or you may have heard about those. So the first step of being trained in being present, especially at a very experiential level, is to observe, which we are all very much familiar with that, because we all observe, and even when you read, you have to observe, and then that will create its own experience. So the first step is observe. But there's a slight differences here. We are always observing, because whether you pay attention or not, the brain is doing its own work, and it's always absorbing information from outside. So we are always observing in some ways or other. But this is a more intentional observation. And that's the first step, observe whatever is happening in front of you. So that's the first step. So even if it is what is happening in front of us is unpleasant and it makes you afraid or it makes you antsy or it makes you uncomfortable, mindfulness practices tell that see if you can observe it just for the heck of it. Just observe. Just take a moment to observe it. And once you observe something, that observation is going to generate experience. And that's the second part of the process of learning to be present. And that's what we call acknowledge. It asks us to acknowledge the experience that come from the observational process. And once we acknowledge the experience, and depending upon what is the nature of the experience, that's where actually the most important things can happen or not happen. That's where the third step. You have observed, and you have now acknowledged the experience that comes from observation. Now, the third step, which is the most important step in this whole process, and also the most challenging aspect of the process, is to your decision to respond to that experience. So, for example, you are afraid, and you choose for a moment that I'm going to actually observe the way I'm being afraid at this moment, and that observation is going to generate a bodily sensation or whichever way sensorily you experience fear, and that will be the second step, the experience of being afraid. Now, the third step is going to be, can you intervene in this process? And this is where the narrative can shift if we have trained ourselves. So once you have observed, you have acknowledged, now the third step is, can you for a moment not react to that observation in a conventional way? So say, for example, you are being afraid, but rather than automatically being swept into the fear, can you for a moment pause and not react to the same fear in the same way? And that's why I say it's the most challenging aspect of the practice, but it also the most important, because this is where things can happen. This is where your relationship and the way you relate to things and the way you react to things and the way you respond to things can literally change if you practice enough. So if you respond to this fear in the same way you have responded earlier, you will notice you will get the conventional result. The result you already had. Maybe you run away from the fear, or maybe you find some distractive strategy to cover up for it moment so that you can forget it. But in this process, mindfulness asks that you can't really run away from things. That's not how life happens. If you really want to see how your life happens and how your mind functions, one of the best ways to observe intentionally, acknowledge intentionally, and then engage with that experience from an intentional purpose and not react to things, at least immediately. And if you have to react, because it could be a powerful emotion, you can react after a moment. And as I said before, a reaction after a moment would have a different sort of quality and consequences than automatic knee-jerk reaction. So that's the third step. Observe, acknowledge, and don't react, at least immediately. And all this happens in the larger context of knowing and understanding that things are temporary. And we all know things never last. It means crises don't last, good things don't last, bad things don't last, because that's the nature of things. That's what we call law of impermanence. But it's easier to think of these things at an intellectual level than to experience or take a moment to experience, especially if you choose to experience your fear or anxiety or your dread or your stress for a moment. You will notice that a thought comes and it stays there for a moment and disappears, and then something comes and it replaces it, and it may even mutate into something different things. So that's literally the whole enterprise, the practical enterprise aspect of the mindfulness is three-step process and all scaffolded in a larger context that things are always temporary. Why don't we have to react to everything? And if we don't react to things, then you've suddenly found a different way of working with whatever is bothering you, stressing you, making you afraid. And it can help you understand things in a slightly different way. So this is the theoretical part. This is where I'm going to hyphenate my theoretical part, because I think this is enough for us to scaffold our experiential part that's coming forth after this. Because I am a believer, I'm a practitioner first. I know the value of practice, because we know things never last. I tend to believe that we have fridge magnets which say this shall too pass. Yet when rubber hits the road, our brain defaults to its automatic processes. Our limbic system hijack our frontal cortical system. So if we want to change the way we function, we have to change the way those two systems interact with each other. And this is where the real practice comes in. So from here, for the next most of the session, we are going to spend a little bit of time learning the technique, what we do in order to change the way we respond to the emerging situations. So from the practical standpoint, in order for us to learn anything, we need to have an object. And because this system is not based on any belief system, object has to be within you, within your body. It can be, you know, within mind. It's not related to any belief system. So maybe for the purpose of uniformity, we can pick something which is very common to all of us. We all breathe, and we can choose a breath, which is personal, it's private, it's a secular, but it is also always with us. And as long as we are alive, it will be there. We can choose that as an object. And then we all have some sort of a ability to pay attention. Those two things, as a human, whether you have practiced this kind of stuff ever or not, you will have it. So your ability to pay attention and an object within yourself which you can pay attention. So those two things are going to work. And then the third thing we need for this whole process is an observation post. So you have an object, which is we all, for the purpose of our this exercise, is our breath, and we have an attention. Ability to pay attention to the breath. And then we are going to pick a place in the body where we can observe the breath. And again, for the purpose of uniformity, we can maybe pick our stomach as a way to observe it. And that's what we are going to do. So this is the first step of what we are talking about, observe. So bring your attention to the breath. Sit whichever way you want to sit, remembering you don't have to sit in a particular way. If you want to lie down, lie down. Just be curious and experimental for the next little while. If you have done this kind of work, you might be familiar with it. If you have not done this kind of work, you can play along. Just be curious and just be have that kind of experimental spirit in you. And just for that few moments, observe your breath. This is the most basic thing body does on its own to keep us alive. Breath comes in and it goes out, comes in, goes out, comes in, goes out. Your task is to just notice the breath on the observation post without any expectation. Just be a scientist here. You know, scientists do not look for particular results. It is open-minded, or he or she is open-minded, and is willing to accept whatever shows up in response to his or her curiosity. So just use that kind of approach here. Your task is to simply focus on this incoming and outgoing process of breathing. And that will help us understand the first aspect of the training, the observation part. You have an object and you're paying attention to it. So just that. Please do not, there's no expectation that you will be relaxed or not. There's no other expectation. Just notice what happens when the breath comes into your stomach. Just notice, and you may find there's a sensations associated with the breath coming in the stomach. There might be some thoughts, there might be some other experiences. Just notice it. Be curious about it. Don't worry about relaxing or not. You let the body does what it does the best. It knows how to relax. This is our way of getting out of its way. You focus on the breath. And you don't have to worry about if breath comes long, short, this way or that way. It comes and goes whichever way it wants to come and go. You will notice that after a few moments, this observation is going to start creating experience in your mind. So that's where that experience may be pleasant and that experience may be unpleasant. That experience may be occasioned by your thoughts, emotions, feelings, all the things you have to do, all the things you're worried about. And that's where the second part of the practice comes in. Instead of running away from that experience, especially if it is unpleasant, see if you can acknowledge it. It's already there. It's there in your mind, whether you like it or not. Just because you want to brush it away doesn't mean that it is going to go away. So instead of brushing it away, resisting it, fighting it, be courageous to just acknowledge this is what is happening in this moment. That's the acknowledgement part. And the third part is, see if you don't react to the same experience in the same way you have done in the past. So observe, acknowledge, and don't react. And please remember, this process can be uncomfortable. Because if you can set aside your desire to be relaxed for a moment, you will notice you are learning a new skill to work with your mind. And the way it generates all the experiences, perceptions, emotions, feelings. So now that we have somehow found this or become familiar with this process, we are going to add a couple of things. We're going to add an anchoring point to the whole process that so that mind can stabilize, so that our attention can stabilize. What I invite you to do is that the next time you breathe in, we are going to start counting from 9 to 1 like this. Breathe in. 9, breathe out, 9. Breathe in, 8, breathe out, 8. Breathe in, 7, breathe out, 7. And so on until you reach 1 without interruption. If you feel interrupted or hijacked by anything, it could be emotion, thought, fear, just notice that. That's the acknowledge part. Don't react to it in the same way. And come back to the breath and start the process once again from the beginning. So this is the important part from the beginning. Even if you fall away at 8 or between a breath, just come back. Start from the beginning. And as you do that, do two things. Be disciplined, which means bringing your mind back to the breath and starting from the beginning. But be gentle at the same time, which means that acknowledging that in spite of your best efforts, your mind continues to wander. So this is where two other things are happening, discipline and gentleness or compassion. This is where, that's how we develop self-compassion. Because if you can be compassionate to the failure you're going to encounter in 10 minutes, you would most likely transfer that self-compassion when bigger things happen. So please remembering, you're not trying to create any special state of mind. You're not trying to create any exotic state of consciousness. You're simply working on two capabilities each one of us has. Number one, our ability to pay attention. Second, our ability to monitor, contemplate, and understand the nature of experience that come from paying attention. Those are the two qualities we are working on. And it is all happening in the present moment. You notice if you can keep attention to your breath, you are already present. So breath comes in, you notice it has arrived, you count. Breath goes out, you notice it has left, you count. If your mind wanders away, you notice it has wandered. Acknowledge that. Bring it back. Don't be irritated. Don't react to it as a personal failure. Start from the beginning. Observe, acknowledge, don't react. Repeat. So take two more breaths. And as you finish those iterations, see if you can take a moment to observe the state of your body. Just do with the intention of noticing, not judging. This is very important here, because judging would mean that you should feel different and better than when you started. However, if you notice whatever the state of your body is, then we have started to learn what it means to be present. Because whatever the present state of your body, even if it is not to your liking, that is the current reality. And that's actually one of the very active ingredient in this whole process. So just notice how you feel. Notice how the mind is. Again, notice the current reality of the mind. Maybe your body has some sensations. Maybe you feel warm, cold, heavy, light, whatever that could be. And then come back. Now, this is essentially how we would start and practice. And these practices are very minimalist. Sometimes that's where they can be deceptively simple, but very difficult to work with, because we are simply changing or trying to change the structure of our mind, which has been established through habit formation throughout our lifespan. So it can be challenging, because for first, in order for us to acknowledge what is really bothering us, it's challenging in itself. And then changing our relationship to that is challenging itself. So in our society, I want to actually quickly put it out. We have made mindfulness practices as a kind of a system to relax. In fact, that's a secondary aspect of it. The real meaning of these practices is to develop a state of clarity. And whenever you act from a state of clarity, you're able to do whatever is necessary to do. And nothing is more important than when you are in a crisis, so that you don't respond to emotional states in a way which hamstring your decision making. You don't also underplay. The idea of mindful acceptance is where we acknowledge the current state of reality without either minimizing it or exaggerating it. And that gives us a powerful incentive to make a decision which is beneficial to all the stakeholders. So from a more practical standpoint, If you notice what happens if you don't respond to the same thing in the same way repeatedly, you will notice that you come to understand your habit patterns. Some of those habit patterns are going to be positive and you will continue to nurture those. Some of those habit patterns during this observational process, you will notice are not very helpful. They may be harmful too. Then you start to shift them to more positive side. And that is the practical value of this. It's just simply, if you want to put it that way, identifying and recognizing a set of old habit patterns we run on, and then changing the habit patterns which are not helpful and nurturing the one which are helpful. That's another way to explain this whole process. And if you keep on doing it, you're recruiting the neuroplastic nature of the brain, and slowly, slowly, with the practice, the structure of your mind actually starts to change. And with that, your responses and your relationship and your reactionary system changes. I'm going to pause here just to give you an opportunity if you have any questions and clarification, because this is essentially what the technique is. Observe, acknowledge, don't react. And the reason why we work with this way is because you are the common denominator in everything. If you start to pay attention to your breath for 5 minutes and 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you'll start to notice your whole life story starts to unravel in front of you. All the things that bothers you, all the things that worries you, all the things that keep you sleepless will show up in your mind when you're paying attention to your breath. And if you can shift your relationship to all the things that bothers you in your mental space, then when those things meet you outside in the life, you've already changed the way your mind functions during those conditions. So the change starts inside, and then when it meets the real life, it automatically kicks in because you have now formed a new habit. So I'm going to pause here, and if you have any questions and clarification, please type it out or speak up, whichever way. Please remember, in spite of all the resources you would have outside of you, one of the greatest untapped source we all have within us is our mind. And this is the instrument or the interface we use to interact with the outside world. It is the one which makes decision for us. It is the one which allows you to see things in certain ways. It's the one which freaks you out. So having it clear, non-reactive, deliberative, purposeful, and intentional can be a resource within yourself which can come handy at any time. And remembering that you can be constrained in the physical aspect. For example, now you can't go outside, a lot of things you can't do. But in any given circumstances, your mind is always there, and it will. This will be the last thing that goes even when we die. So spending some time every day, and I say this as a practitioner, might be a best investment or one of the best investments you make. If you find that you become uncomfortable during this process, remember that skill learning is always uncomfortable. You will not learn anything without any or some discomfort. So if discomfort is there, that is part of the learning process. If you let go of the idea that it has to be relaxing, you will notice relaxation happening from a state of clarity and peacefulness and contentment.